So grateful to see everybody here, as well as everybody online today. Sun is out, and you are out, and we are just glad to be able to worship together. It's always a good time. So we start off the message today a little bit different. I want you to watch this.
You must be Bruce. I've been expecting you.
This is hilarious. So you're the boss and the electrician and the janitor. Must be a killer Christmas party. Don't get drunk, though. One of you might need a ride home.
You always were funny, Bruce. Just like your father. He didn't mind rolling up his sleeves either, son. People underestimate the benefit of good old manual labor. It's freedom in it. Some of the happiest people in the world go home smelling to high heavens at the end of the day.
Murray, what is this? How do you know my father, and how'd you get my pager number?
Oh, I know quite a lot about you, Bruce. Just about everything there is to know. Everything you've ever said, or done, or thought about doing, right there in that file cabinet.
Wow, a whole drawer just for me.
Mind if I take a look?
It's your line.
This ought to be good.
Now, this last entry was a little disturbing. Gloves are off, God. God has taken my bird and my bush. God is a mean kid with a magnifying glass. Smite me, O mighty smiter. Now, I'm not much for blaspheming, but that last one made me laugh.
Are you spying on me? Who are you?
I'm the one. Huh? Creator of the heavens and the earth, Alpha and Omega. Bruce, I'm God.
Bingo! Yahtzee! Is that your final answer? Our service has God! Bing, 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 bing. Well, it was nice to meet you, God. Thank you for the Grand Canyon, and good luck with the apocalypse.
Well, little Bruce Almighty there for you, and Morgan Freeman as our God character. If you've never seen that movie, I invite you to check that out. 2003, so I guess it makes it a classic now. But it's the story of a man named Bruce who has a little God encounter. After all these wrong things happen in his life, God invites him to take charge and to see what he would do. And the rest is to be determined. Invite you to watch that. But I think that the clip kind of shows us a little picture, an answer to a question that I don't know if you've ever thought or asked yourself, but that question is, have you ever wanted a little face-to-face talk with God? You know, like Bruce there, he didn't first realize who he was talking to. But have you ever just wondered and thought, like, I'd just like to have a little chat with God right now? Just about this? Well, we're in this series that we're studying the book of Job that answers a lot of deep questions, a lot of big questions. And we said from the start that the story of Job is really a story of a guy who did everything right. He was holy, he followed the Lord. He did at that time and made sacrifices, which was kind of like required of him. He did good things. He had everything that he wanted, and he did everything right. But then everything goes wrong. Everything goes wrong, that he loses everything. He loses his family, all his possessions. He loses even his health. But there are things going on in the story that Job doesn't know about. That there's this heavenly realm where God is at work, and not only is God at work, but there's this adversary, the Hasatan, the Satan, who is trying to make a fool of God by saying, well, Job is only following you for the things he gets. He only follows you when it's good. He'll turn his back on you, God, when things go wrong. And so there's this little challenge that's occurring that Job has absolutely no idea is going on. Well, in the midst of this story, after Job loses everything, he has these three friends, these three buddies that come and they sit with him. They mourn with him. They grieve with him. But then they enter into this kind of answer-giving session that each one takes different questions that Job has or that brings from his situation. And his friends attempt to help him give some answers. And the thing is, like, I think with us, right, like, don't we bump up against things that don't make sense in our lives? That it's like trial after trial, it's like the perfect storm, that everything comes at once. And isn't it true that, I don't know, if we really admitted it, we do want answers from God. Maybe you've prayed for answers from God. You've sought God. Have you even thought of like just like a little face-to-face conversation here? But I think the moral of the story and the whole context, the broader scope of Job really points to this idea that those questions, those are really opportunities for our faith to deepen and to grow and our relationship with God to grow. So we started off the series with a little reading plan. We had like these papers available in the lobby posted online for you to read along with the story of Job, with the book of Job, read this book of the Bible. I hope some of you have taken advantage of that and walking through with that. But if you're doing that right now, or if you've been with us the last few weeks, or if you've ever read the book of Job, you'd realize that by now, by week 4 of 5 here, you'd notice a pattern. You notice a pattern in the story that Job raises questions. These big questions, like why is there suffering? Why is there pain? Why is this happening? Job's friends then respond to Job. They try to give their answers and explanations. Then the pattern is Job, he hears those answers. He's not satisfied with their answers. He raises more questions, and they answer those questions, and so on. And what happens is by this time in the story, by Job chapter 30, everybody's just frustrated. Job, he's frustrated with his friends. His friends, they're really frustrated with Job and his reactions. And pretty soon, all of this is basically like this big downward spiral where there's just not any good answer. So today, we enter the part in the story where Job's just done. He's just done with them. He's done with his friends. And instead of asking another question to the friends to try to answer or attempt to answer, he decides to take his questions, his anger, his frustrations to the one in charge. He takes it all to God. And so after the conversations in the book of Job, we see that Job and God have this little having it out together, kind of like the movie clip with Morgan Freeman and Jim Carrey there. Like they're having a conversation at this point. And so today I want to read you parts of Job's side of the equation, Job's words to God. And you're going to see in a minute that it's very clear how Job is feeling at this point. There's very big hints in the story that he's hurt, he's angry, he's confused, he's frustrated. And Job decides to do something that, especially in ancient times, thousands of years ago, Job does something that you were not supposed to do. And what he does is he challenges God. He challenges God. He challenges God directly. In the words of Bruce Almighty, you almighty smiter, right? Which raises, I think, a big question that we're going to look at today is that, is it okay to be angry at God? Is it okay to be angry at God? Is it okay to challenge God? And I want you to listen to this, starting in Job chapter 30, verse 20. Printed in your worship guide too. We'll also have it up there on the screen for you. But listen to this. Listen, these are Job's words. He says, I cry out to you, God, but you do not answer. I stand up, but you merely look at me. You turn on me ruthlessly. With the might of your hand, you attack me. And I want to encourage you to read the whole chapter there. But what we see is Job is challenging God in a way that we don't see very, very often. He's emotional. He's angry. You hear like the pleading in his voice. Can't you hear that? Like he accuses God of not being fair. And I think this is like one of the most raw and real and honest conversations that we have in the Bible. of someone going directly to God. It's a significant moment in the book of Job, but also in the entire Bible, because it flies in the face of what most people believe. It portrays a righteous man, a good man, Job, directly challenging God. And I think it also shows us some challenging things about what it really means to have faith. About what it really means to have faith. What does it really mean to have faith? Can we challenge God? Can we be even angry with God and still have faith? Because a lot of times we think that those things are mutually exclusive. Well, the first thing we learn is that faith in God does not indicate the absence of anger. Faith in God is not the absence of anger. And so what I want you to do is, maybe it's not anger for you, but you can insert any, like what we say, negative emotion, you know, not determining things, negative emotions as negative, but things that we usually deem as negative, things like grief, frustration, confusion, annoyance, like insert that where that anger is. Like the faith in God is not the absence of frustration or grief or confusion or annoyance or anger. And so there's a lot going on in Job's plea to God. See, he even goes on and he says, basically, like, God, like, you attacked me here. You did this. He's in despair. He says, my skin is just charred. It's like flaking off here. He's in mourning. He's in grief. He shows rage and anger. And there's a lot there that's all directed at God. It's all directed at God. And it might be really surprising to you that if you read the Bible, like one of the misconceptions of Job's friends and the Old Testament scriptures is that it's sinful or it's wrong to get mad at God. A lot of us maybe grew up or were taught that growing up, or were told that like it's wrong, like you can't get mad at God, you can't confront God, you can't say like you know something that God doesn't, you can't go to God. That being angry with God, we've been taught at times, is a sign that you no longer have faith. But Job shows us something really different than that. Faith isn't the absence of anger or grief or frustration or confusion. I think I bring this up because we often fall into the same trap. We think that we're not supposed to feel certain emotions. Like, oh gosh, I can't feel that. Like, that's evil, that's sinful, that's wrong. I can't talk to God, especially when it concerns God. Like, oh, how dare I think that? Like, how dare I feel that? You know, that we should just love God and accept everything that happens in life, and that we should be grateful for everything that happens as well. And we're taught that if you don't, then you lack faith. But Job shows us that sometimes anger can be one of the most faithful things that we have to offer. Because you know what it indicates? It indicates honesty. It indicates honesty. I remember there was a time in my own life when I was going through a season of loss, a loss of multiple friends and family member, and I was questioning God. I was really questioning, like, well, who are you, God? What's going on? And it was about, like, the springtime, and it felt like things kept, like, happening one thing after another. And you know what I did? You know what I did to get back at God? I boycotted Easter that year. I boycotted Easter because I'm like, you don't deserve me, you know, you think back, you're like, that's kind of crazy, right? Like, but I was like, in my mind, I was like, I'm not going to celebrate resurrection because God, like, all these bad things happen. I'm going to get back at you, God, by turning my back on you, God. I'm not going to celebrate with you, you know? So I sat home, like, you know, what was that, right? But I remember that, thinking about that and recognizing, like, that was a point in my faith where I had to be angry at God. I don't necessarily boycott Easter if I could go back again. But I gave God the silent treatment by boycotting Easter, and that expressed my feelings towards God. Being angry with God indicated that I still had faith. I indicated that I still had a relationship, even if I was going to him in anger. Even being angry with God indicates that we can still have faith. And I think that's why, like, church, Big C Church, Table Life Church here, we need to make space for that. We need to make space. Faith makes room for those frustrations and anger and confusion. And so I think that that's just an important thing because we see it all over, guys. Like, you know, there's a whole book. It's called Lamentations here. Pick it up sometime. It's all lament. It's all people, like just, oh, things are awful, God. Like, hey, help us here. You go through the Psalms. There's quite a few Psalms here, and there's quite a few that talk about like going to God and saying, God, why are you doing this? God, how come you're allowing this to happen? God, just these frustration, just this expressing these strong emotions to God. And I don't know, if it's in the Bible and there's people sharing that, maybe we could learn something from that. To say, no, it's not sinful to be angry at God. It's not sinful or to go and to say, God, I'm frustrated with you. Like, hey, why? What gives? What's going on here? Because if you're feeling annoyed or frustrated, those expressions can actually be an act of faith because you're saying, God, I'm still in this. I want to know. You can tell God what you are feeling. You don't have to go to anybody else. You can go directly to God and tell him exactly how you're feeling to communicate with him. The faith is not the absence of having strong emotions. And Job shows us that. But it also teaches us that we don't stop there either. That faith in God, though, the second thing is that faith in God seeks understanding. We don't just stop it with being angry, you know. We don't just stop with the blow up. Faith in God seeks understanding, seeks asking the questions and diving deeper. Anybody that has had kids or nieces or nephews or has babysat before, you know that kids are natural question askers, aren't they? And it's proven scientifically that kids, in the first 5 years of their life, especially, well, once they start talking, of course, but in the first 5 years of their talking experience, that they ask more questions than the next 25 years of their lives. Kids are natural question askers. I uncovered a couple really good questions that kids have asked in church, in some stories. There was a little girl that asked her teacher, her Sunday school teacher, are there any devils on earth? And the Sunday school teacher looked at her confusingly and said, why do you ask that? And the little girl responded, I think there may be one in my class. There's a little boy who asked the pastor at his church, Pastor, why do you bow your head before you preach your sermon? He had noticed he did that multiple times. And the pastor said, I pray to God to ask him to help me preach. The little boy looked at him confusedly and said, well, then how come he doesn't do it? Yikes, right? And then finally, there were two siblings, 8 years old and 4 years old, discussing Adam and Eve and the story of Adam and Eve. And the 8-year-old asked the 4-year-old, why did Adam and Eve die? Why did they die? And the 4-year-old said, that's what happens when you eat bad fruit. Right, questions, right? Just questions. Kids ask them freely. We kind of limit our question asking as adults. And truthfully, questions can be annoying. I mean, if you've ever taught a young class of children or a group of kids asking question after question, why this, why that, why that? And truthfully, you can be in a place even as adults that questions are not welcome. But that's the interpretation and the perspective of Job's friends. See, Job's friends say the contrary. They say, you just accept what God and life give you. You just accept it. You just take it. The questions are not welcome with God. That's their interpretation. But instead of backing down, Job does the contrary. He leans into the questions. He wants to better understand. And that's so important, friends, that in that place of anger, frustration, confusion, to dive deeper, to dive closer, to uncover, say, I'm just not satisfied here, and asking those big questions. And chapter 31 is really a chapter of Job asking questions, asking and looking to God for evidence. And he kind of presses on like he's a lawyer in a court proceeding. And it kind of ends this way in verse 35 to 37. He says, oh, that I had someone to hear me. I sign now my defense. Let the Almighty answer me. Let my accuser put his indictment in writing. Surely I'd wear it on my shoulder. I'd put it on like a crown. I would give him an account of my every step. I present it to him as a ruler. You know, he's kind of like being in court, right? He's saying, explain it all, God. I'm coming to you. I'm not satisfied. I am going to dig deeper. I am going to turn towards, not away. I am going to go and focus on these things and ask the big questions. And friends, I think I can identify with that. You know, that when things happen, And you begin to question your faith and maybe things that you were taught 30, 40 years ago. And you're beginning to uncover to say, maybe my faith has changed a little bit. Maybe God is a little bit different than what I once understood. That you seek to understand. You seek to grow. I mean, there's just so many things in faith to process, to ask the big questions, and not to shy away from them, but to dig deeper. You think questions like, is the Bible really true? Who wrote the Bible? Why? Like, how do I make sense of what I hear scientifically and what do I hear in faith? Like, in evolution and creation. How do I know? How do we know that Jesus really rose from the dead and his disciples didn't just steal his body? Does church matter? Can I just be a Christian and a good person and not be connected to church? You know, what happens at communion? What is this? What do I actually believe here? Why does Jesus say things like, love my enemies? Why does he call us to take that seriously? Does he call us to take that seriously? You see, many of us are made to just accept things. Just to say, you know, the Bible says it, that settles it. You know, the preacher said it, that settles it. That it's blind faith without questions. And some say questions are bad or wrong. But I also want to say this, that that's not us here at Table Life. That if you're looking just to, you know, receive just some kind of truth and that you should accept everything, no. I want you to question. I want you to dive deeper. I love when people are like, hey, you know what? I have a different thought on what you said there in that sermon. Like, I don't care about challenges. I want to also learn and grow. And, you know, I'm diving deeper into scriptures and I'm learning and growing and being like, that's a very interesting thought. Look, we never stop doing that. We bring our questions to the table. The 11th century early church father Anselm said it like this, I do not seek to understand in order that I may believe, but I believe in order to understand. In other words, faith is a journey of asking questions, seeking understanding from God. And that faith can include strong emotions, that we can be angry or upset or confused or frustrated, that we can seek to understand and ask questions of God and Scripture and dive deeper ourselves. But lastly, faith in God is really about relationship. Faith in God is really about relationship. See, the last assumption of Job's friends is that faith is just mentally assent to something. To say, I believe and I said yes, like just mentally. But this is a misunderstanding of what Jesus teaches is at the heart of faith. To think that faith is just to say yes in your head or to just have all the right answers, but that's not the definition of faith. Not as the early church understood it, not as the Hebrews understood it. Faith is not to believe a statement, but to trust a person. Faith is not believing a statement, but it's trusting a person. The Greek word from which we get faith, it's in Scripture, pisteo, it literally means to trust, to act on, not just to mentally say yes, to trust a person. Faith isn't just believing something about God, but it's having a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And so suddenly, what Job does in his questions, it makes so much more sense. That it's about the relationship, not having all the answers or having a list of your check boxes that you go through, but it's having a relationship with God. Psychologists talk about markers in relationships and markers in relationships that point to going in the right or the wrong direction. And we talked about this a little bit on week one about couples. The best predictor is turning towards versus away in the future of their relationship. Well, another predictor is that at a time of conflict, a person in a relationship, friendship, whatever it may be, has two options. The person can bring the conflict to the person, or the person can decide it's not worth it. They can bring it to the person or just say, it's just not worth it. And psychologists say that the healthier thing to do 9 times out of 10 is to bring it to the person, even to have the argument instead of deciding it's not worth it. The worst thing that we can do in any relationship is to simply not care. Simply not care. And I think that goes the same thing with God. is that when we are in relationship, we go to. We go to instead of, I just don't care anymore and I'm out of this. You know, all of us, you know that when you turn to and when you dive through and when there's through the other side of those things that you grow and there's honesty and there's health, that sharing helps heal us. And this applies to God as well. When we have a struggle with God, even if we're mad, God would rather us have it out with him than ignore it and walk away. That God, I would say this, would rather have your fist than your shoulder. And when we're wrestling, that means that we're still in it. That means that faith is the relationship. And that's why we call it a relationship with Jesus. Because it's not just saying, okay, I mentally believe this list of things. It's saying, no, I am in relationship with God through Jesus Christ, that I can know him and grow in that relationship. To know, and that's why we talk, we use words like he walks with me. You know, the song goes, he talks with me. You know, that you have a relationship that's nurtured and that over time grows. And sometimes it's through those dark and dull times, those questions that we dig deeper. And so next week, friends, we're going to see God's response to Job. And you might be a little surprised at what God says to Job, but when we get there, we get there. But I think the turning point in this story is really when Job goes to God. Right here, when Job talks to God, he brings all he is feeling. And that's the most important. It took like 30 chapters to get here, right? But finally, Job just says, okay, I'm done with the friends and the consults and the answers that y'all are bringing, and it's just not right, it's all messed up. I'm gonna go directly to God. He brings it to God. And friends, you can bring it to God too. You can bring it to God. I don't know if you've done that. I don't know if you've entered into that relationship. You know, God is always waiting there. For many of us, you know, we look back and we see God pursuing us in our story. But you can go directly to God too. And I share this because I think so many of us feel bad or guilty about challenging God. Many of us, honestly, we have doubts. But some of us have been told that we're going to be struck by lightning if we question anything. Or if we go to God in anger, forbid that, right? But I want you to know that faith makes space to be honest with God. Faith makes space to be honest with God. And so this week, I want to encourage you to do what Job did. To bring it up, to bring it out, and to take it to God. To take it to God. And so maybe you're asking, well, how do I do that? That you can go directly to God. That maybe if you're a praying person, you know, if you spend time with prayer, by the way, you don't have to speak in a holy art thou language and have all these words. Like, prayer is just talking to God. It's sitting down, and sometimes, honestly, I'll sit there, like, in my car, and I'll be like, hey, God, I have some questions for you, or hey, God, like, I really need this right now, or hey, God, like, thank you for this gorgeous day and just for reminding me that you're here. Like you can do that, too. Just a conversation with God. So if you're a praying person, like, have a prayer. Spend some time talking, asking those questions, even if it's aloud. If you're a writer, some of us are writers, write a letter. Write a letter to, or put it in your phone to express, like, your thoughts or your feelings or your questions. Maybe you're somebody that just, like, needs to move. You're like, I just can't sit still. Like, go for a walk. Like I said, go for a walk with God. Go to the park, go outside, go for a walk. Or maybe for you, you're a verbal processor and you do need someone. Ask someone just to listen. Not to give advice or feedback, but just to say, I just need you to listen to me. Listen with me. A trusted friend or if you want to come to me as a pastor, just to talk and to share what you feel. And so I invite you today that even when you start, when you come forward for the Lord's table for communion today, maybe for you it's taking time up here. Just start by kneeling here and letting God know. To bring it all, to know that God is big enough to handle what you got. And the more real you are with God, I believe, the more real he becomes to you. And so for you, it might be the first time. I acknowledge as well that maybe you've never gone directly to God before, and you're almost afraid to. I invite you that God is a God of grace and love, and that he wants a relationship with us. And maybe for you, this is the day, this is the time to start that relationship. to go directly to him, to turn away, to say, I don't want any more of what I've been a part of or what I've been following, but I want to turn to you, God. And I believe that when you do that, when you go to God honestly and transparently and real with warts and all, when we do that, we remember that that means we are still in the struggle and that we are still in relationship. And that the more real and honest and open that we are with the Lord, the more he reveals himself to us. Let's pray.